Hello, all of you out there in Radio Land. You're listening to KPTZ Port Townsend 91.9 FM. For our virtual listeners, we hope your device is locked onto our website, kptz.org. I'm Marianne McNellis, and this show is called Our Town. The show highlights some of the unique personalities that make Jefferson County, Washington, so special. The COVID crisis has changed our lives so very much. Our radio station itself is a whole new world. With an abundance of caution, most of us cannot use our studio equipment to record our shows. Individual DJs can creep into the studio and do their shows in solitary confinement. But those of us who have real live guests on the shows are not able to invite them to the studio. Needless to say, that changes the game. We do have a technological workaround where we create and record the show without even visiting KPTZ's world headquarters in a sweet little trailer in the parking lot of the Mountain View School. Admittedly, our audio quality is not up to our usual standards, but the show must go on. So please bear with us if the sound quality isn't quite what we usually deliver. Consider the content. The purpose of Our Town is to share the stories of some of the fascinating people who make up this community. But the show is only a half hour long, which definitely is not long enough to do justice to some of our fellow citizens. So it's a synopsis. We try to get our guests to talk about their lives, their dreams, and how they ended up on the northwestern edge of the continent, able to look across the Strait of Juan de Fuca, right at Vancouver Island, Canada. Over time, we'll be talking with firefighters and foodies, bus drivers and baristas, the lawyers and the ladies who lunch. We try to find out what makes them tick and what they think about living in beautiful Jefferson County amid the deer, the otter, and even the magnificent soaring eagles. The past year has brought some remarkable changes to our lives. Vaccinations are now well underway, with frontline workers and the eldest going first. Now that a third vaccine has been approved in the USA, let's hope we really can get everyone vaccinated by summer. Meanwhile, we still live in a town full of masked strangers. I bet you haven't met very many new people in the past year. Well, listening to a show like Our Town on KPTZ is one way to get to know some of the people around you. My guest today is the superintendent of the Port Townsend School District. She's probably very well known by parents and students alike, but the rest of us maybe haven't even met her yet. Sandra, who goes by Sandy Gessner Crabtree, actually accepted the job as superintendent in January 2020, just a heartbeat before the pandemic began. Her contract ran from then till July 2021. But before we talk about the harrowing year of the pandemic, let's get to know her a bit. Welcome to the show, Superintendent Gessner.
Thank you, Marianne. It's really delightful to be here.
Let's start at the beginning. Are you a local girl born and bred on the Olympic Peninsula?
No, I'm not. I am a wanderer, and I found my way here through Dr. John Palm and our professional work together. So I was born and raised mostly in California, the Central Valley, and then Southern California.
What did your folks do?
My dad was a retired Air Force, and my mom was a homemaker and supported him in his work later as an insurance agent.
And were you an only child?
No, I am the youngest of four girls, kind of an afterthought. My oldest sisters are about 10 and 15 years older than I am.
Wow, that is a gap in there.
Mm-hmm. They were all educators, so I came to this position. It's very familial in the sense how I got here.
Did you always know you wanted to be a teacher?
Absolutely not. Never wanted to be a teacher.
What was your plan, your original plan?
Like a lot of people who grew up in Southern California, an actress or a singer or anything else but a teacher, honestly. I also thought about law school for many years.
But you went instead with the tried and true. So obviously you didn't start out as a superintendent. Where did you start? What were your first couple of jobs?
My first job was down in Capistrano Beach, Southern California. I was an intern teacher doing my program through UC Irvine. Very grateful to Capistrano Unified for having that program. As my husband was finishing his graduate work, moved up to the Bay Area. My first official gig was in Richmond, California at a gifted magnet school. From there, when he finished his graduate work, we moved to Lodi, California, which is in the Central Valley, and we were there for 17 years. there, I did my teaching. I was part of a lot of union leadership, new teacher leadership, mentoring, and got my administrative credential from the Pacific University in Stockton. From then, I was going to be a full-time mentor to teachers as they entered and as they considered leaving the workforce. And then we moved up here to Silverdale, Washington.
When you were teaching originally, were you in the grammar school or high school? Where were you positioned?
Elementary, Mary Ann. Elementary. Everything from K through 6, elementary.
Okay. You obviously along the way have obtained several degrees and certifications. How does that work? What's the stepping stones there? Where do you go?
Oftentimes, once you've done your teaching certificate, and that is done undergrad in Washington State, but it's actually a fifth year in California, so it's an extra year that you stay to do your teaching certificate. Oftentimes, then people will either fold that into a master's, or they'll usually get their master's in educational leadership or curriculum and instruction. Then from there, you don't actually have to have your superintendent certificate, but they are offering those now. And I got mine through Seattle Pacific University when I went back to do more graduate work, and then my executive leadership for teaching and learning.
Okay. So you spent 17 years in the Central Valley there and had a variety of jobs. What was the last one before you moved up to the Northwest?
Fourth grade. Fourth grade was the grade that I left. And then when we moved up here, I was very lucky to get a job in Bremerton School District as a LAP title teacher. So I specialized in reading. And then I was an instructional coach. And then within a year, I was a principal in Bremerton School District at View Ridge Elementary.
Mm-hmm. One of my cousins was a principal of an elementary school, and some of the stories she had were pretty incredible. I didn't realize how complex it was.
It's very complex, but I will tell you that being an elementary school principal is probably one of the best jobs in the entire world. You almost feel like a superhero each and every day, and to be part of your staff's lives and your children's lives, your students' lives, that's a pretty amazing job.
Why do you think you like teaching young children?
As I said, I wasn't sure that I wanted to be a teacher. And what happened for me is that after I graduated from California Lutheran University, I spent the summer and fall getting a paralegal certificate. As I was doing that work for 2 years in Orange County with a defense attorney, I was assigned to a lot of death penalty cases. And part of that was to do the work on all of the evidence, all of the boxes and boxes of evidence and documents that told their life story. And each and every one had their school cumulative file in the evidence documents. For each and every one, a lot of their pain, a lot of what happened for them started there in elementary school. And in the school, it was pretty clear that something about these individuals was different, or their pathway was pretty challenging. As I was contemplating whether to do law or whether to move on to something else, it occurred to me that really it's pretty foundational to do this work in education, and it can change lives and it can change things for good. And so that's what changed my attitude about teaching. And in the summers, I was always a camp counselor anyway. I was always the choir director for children's choirs and drama events. So I came by working with kids very naturally, and I loved kids. It just became a pretty clear path to me that in order to do this work, I needed to go back into education. And that's what I did.
So do you have children of your own?
I do. I have two amazing women that are two daughters, and they both live here still in Washington, and I'm so grateful for them. Being their mom is one of the things I'm proudest of.
Did you ever end up teaching them?
I did. I got to be both of their fourth grade teachers at two different schools. It's actually funny. And a lot of people think about, how did that work? But my poor husband, I made him toe the line. He had to go to teacher conferences and face me across the table. And he's the one who was in charge of doing all the homework. It worked out really well. In fact, in one of my daughter's years, they didn't even know she was my daughter for about halfway through the year, because she went by Crabtree and I went by Gessner. And so I think that was a testament to that work ethic. They both are very grateful that they had me, but they said I was pretty tough.
How do they look at it now? Is it basically a positive experience, or was it sort of freaky?
No, they actually say I was one of the best teachers they ever had, and they always appreciated the classroom environment I was able to create and that love of learning. So they actually look back on it pretty fondly.
Did either of them go into teaching?
No.
Okay.
You know what? That's probably my fault. I don't know why I did that to them, but I dissuaded them from going into teaching. It is definitely a helping profession. And for many, many years, as most teachers know, you don't make a lot of money. Being a woman these days is very, very different. and they're fiercely independent. And so I tried to steer them into careers or things that fit them that would probably make more money than teaching.
And what did they end up doing?
That's the funny thing. For one, she is a financial analyst at Nordstrom's in Seattle, and she actually now also does data for them. And then my oldest one went the pathway of being one of those people in the people business, and she is a staffer for Congressman Kilmer in Bremerton.
Ah, that sounds like an interesting career.
Yeah, they both have fabulous, interesting careers. Keep them hot.
Yeah, I would think so. Okay, we're arriving at the point where you're moving to the Pacific Northwest. But first, you're listening to KPTZ, Fort Townsend, 91.9 FM. The show is called Our Town. I'm your host, Marianne McNellis. Our Town profiles some of the wonderful people who live and work on the Olympic Peninsula. My guest today, Sandy Gessner, who's superintendent of the Port Townsend School District. She was just telling me about her years in California, and we're about to hear how she ended up here. So what was it that made you move to Washington State?
My husband's career. So he had an opportunity to move to the Pacific Northwest, and the girls were just right before entering high school and entering middle school. It looked like a wonderful opportunity. So as a family, we all said yes, and here we came. I hit the area and the job market not at a great time for educators because there are a lot of schools closing in Central Kitsap, and the economy was not doing well. So I was very fortunate to get my first teaching job in Washington State in Bremerton School District at Armandjar Elementary. This was 2007.
2007, yeah, that wasn't a great year economically for most people.
No. So again, very lucky to even have a job at that point. When I moved up here and I applied for my teaching certificate, I automatically got my administrative degree certificate as well. I hadn't really planned on using it until the girls were in college. But once the district knew I had my administrative degree, they encouraged me. I was already being a teacher leader as a teacher on special assignment to coach teachers and schools. That just came naturally. So within a year, I received the principalship at View Ridge Elementary. And I was there for 5 years. During that time, I did go back to graduate school to get my superintendency credential and my executive leadership work on teaching and learning. Through that, I met Dr. John Palm, who was the principal at Bremerton High School. He went his way, I went my way. I moved on after that program to work at the Educational Service District in Bremerton. And I was the executive director of teaching and learning and did a lot of professional development for actually all of the districts in this area. The ESD 114 serves all of Kitsap County and the Olympic Peninsula. So I got to know a lot of school districts. Dr. Palm called me in 2018 and said he had a challenge for me and would I like to come up and work in this district, Port Townsend, and help them with special education and inclusive practices and beginning to understand tiered services of supports. And I can never say no to a challenge, so I said yes. And that's how I became the assistant superintendent for Port Townsend School District in 2018-19, and then again last year in 19-20.
Okay, but your husband was still working down in Bremerton, right?
Yes, his job is in Silverdale.
His job is in Silverdale, so you were sort of commuting up here.
I was, yes. For the first 2 years, I had a place out by Four Corners, and I stayed many nights per week. And now that I'm superintendent, I live up here during the week and go home on the weekends.
And what is it that your husband does?
He is the senior pastor of Silverdale Lutheran Church.
Explain a little bit about how you ended up taking the job for 1 year only as superintendent.
Dr. Palm received the offer from Puyallup School District in early January. And at that time, most school districts like to go for a pretty long search. It takes time to get a search consultant and to line up people. We didn't yet know that COVID was coming, but while the board was deciding what to do, COVID had started to appear. They turned to me and they asked and inquired whether I would stay and be the superintendent. And it was just such a lovely offer. I fell in love, of course, with this district as soon as I started working here with the people in the community. And so it was easy to say yes, but I did say that would probably be for 1 year only because my home is in Silverdale. But I want to let you know that I will always think of these 3 years so fondly. I love this place. I find the community to be so endearing. And I find the people here, just like you and like John, The people I've met from Rotary, the Skillmation people, the volunteers who come into our schools. It's an amazing community. Anybody would be lucky to live here and to work here.
You had the misfortune, I guess I would call it, to take over just as the pandemic really was spreading like wildfire. Before we get into the details, for those of us who aren't directly involved with the school district, how many students, how many teachers, what's the scope? What are we talking about?
You bet. Port Townsend School District has, prior to COVID, about 1,200 students. We currently have about 1,011 students. So we have lost students during the pandemic. We employ about 80 certificated teachers and about the same number of classified staff, bus drivers, maintenance, custodians, paraeducators. We serve grades kindergarten through 12th grade. We have three school buildings, Salish Coast Elementary and Blue Heron Middle School and Port Townsend High School. We also do have a preschool program that's housed at Salish Coast Elementary. And then we have an alternative learning program, which is called Ocean, and that's housed at Blue Heron Middle School.
When we were talking earlier, I knew there were free and price reduced lunches, but I was really struck by the number of kids that are receiving that. Can you explain that again?
I can. So in our country, when school districts get additional funding for poverty, that is based on the free and reduced applications that come in through families. So our current data is that we are about at 51% free and reduced. That means that's the number of families who apply for either free lunch or reduced price lunch. The districts around us are similar. Chimicum is about 53%. Quilcene, though, is much less. It's about 30%. And Brennan, our neighbors to the south, are 77%. Comparing that, Squim School District, which is about 43%, and Port Angeles is about 53%.
Interesting. So within weeks of you taking over as superintendent, everything began to change. What happened at first in the school district? Explain what happened.
It was pretty fast and furious, actually. And it's interesting to be doing this interview now because it was a year ago on March 17th that Governor Inslee closed down schools. At first, we thought it was just going to be 2 weeks to try to understand the nature of the virus and how it was going to work. There was a lot of confusion at that point. Everybody got sent home. As a system, schools are very traditional. Most of what we do feels very traditional, from the calendar to grade levels to the buildings. And so this was very new territory for all of us. Of course, we all now know that that closure lasted until the end of the school year. During that, we had lots of different challenges. We still needed to educate our students. We still needed to provide services for our students who have individual education plans or students with disabilities. We still needed to graduate our seniors. At first, it was almost as if everything was quiet for 2 weeks, and then we just got to work. We distributed Chromebooks for students who did not have at home any sort of devices. We created e-learning websites and something we like to call playlists to organize the work. Our parents became our closest allies, and I know that they were thrust into a position they never expected to try to work full-time from home or have to go into work and have to be responsible for facilitating their children's learnings. We learned a lot of things that spring. Mostly we learned that we needed to back off a little bit on how much we were expecting, that we couldn't just try to take the traditional system and shove it into a new way of bringing it to kids. We needed to be a lot more student-centered about what they needed during this time, because of course everyone was going through major challenges of their own, whether that was financial or just fear from the pandemic itself. We took all of that into consideration when we asked stakeholders from around the community to join us in writing our reopening plan, which we did last May and June, that started this fall.
Okay. During the summer, what was happening during the summer?
Well, you know what, Marianne? Our staff was tired, to be honest with you. We put our plan together for fall by the beginning of June. And then once we had our last day of school, it was important to me that people go home and get rested, because I knew July was going to go very quickly. And I knew August would show up on its own with a lot of new work. And it certainly did. We created three different plans for each one of the buildings and the different levels of kids. We surveyed all the parents in August and asked if they wanted to come to school physically. And we had, of course, the protocols and the guidelines from OSPI and the Department of Health and the CDC that we had to follow. That changed the nature of what we do tremendously. But families got to choose whether they stayed remote only or whether they came in. We call that the blended model or distance only model. We do have to abide by face masks, the 6 feet of distancing, extra cleaning and disinfecting. So it changed the nature of what we do in many different ways.
Okay, we're recording this show in March 2021. What is the status of the schools right now?
We're really pleased, and I have to thank our community because without our community, we would not be where we are. We were one of the very few school districts that got to open on September 8th, and we opened with students in our schools all the way from kindergarten all the way up to 12th grade. And that's not the norm for how many, many different school districts had to start. So we had about 50% of our students attending in person and about 50% choosing to attend remote. And now we're up to about 65% that are in our buildings and the rest of them are still doing remote.
It's my understanding when you say they're in your building, it's not the old 5 days a week in school.
No, I'm sorry for that so much. Students that are attending our blended model attend usually 2 days per week. And then the other 3 days per week, they are doing their lessons and their follow-up work at home.
Okay. Now, this is somewhat controversial, which is how do you really gauge how it's working? I really find it hard to imagine, let's say, an eight-year-old at home trying to be on Zoom or whatever. Are the kids really gonna learn as much as they would have? I've heard some people say, if you're in second grade should be repeated. Yet I'm sure there are some students who have sailed through it pretty well. So how do you handle that?
We're still gathering data on understanding evidence of learning. We know that for most students, learning has occurred. To what level and to what depth, that's still to be determined. But we do know from our elementary school that uses a universal screener called FastBridge that kids are actually making progress. Even though it may not be what they would have made if they were here, we still don't know. Learning is occurring. The same happens at the middle school level. But what we have happen when kids are getting older is that this is harder. It's harder to ask kids who don't have full executive function yet, because in brain development, that usually doesn't happen anywhere between the ages of 22 and 30 for most adults. So to ask them to be highly focused and highly organized and highly disciplined about doing this thing called school virtually is very, very difficult. And it's probably much harder for our middle school students and our high school students. So some of them actually just don't show up. By that, I mean, they don't turn on their Zoom cameras or they don't even attend class, but that's a very small majority. Most of our kids are giving it the best effort they have, and we know that learning is occurring.
Well, that's interesting because I would have thought it would have been the younger kids who'd have more problems with it, but you're actually saying that it's the older kids that maybe are exercising their judgment in a way that might be debatable.
Yep, that's one way of putting it, for sure.
Yeah, interesting. I mean, obviously you can't foretell the future, but do you think in your gut that there's any chance before this school year is up that the kids will be able to return more?
You know, I tell everybody that we got where we are right now by following the data, and our way out of this is still by following the data. We are very fortunate right now in Jefferson County. Last week's two-week average per 100,000 is 18. So that's 18 out of 100 per 1,000. And then the positivity rate is below 3. So those are good indicators. And if those indicators stay that way for the next 3 weeks, if we could get a good 4-week solid tracking of that data, then I think we can be looking at expanding services. I want you to know that we work very, very close with Dr. Locke and the health district here to make our determinations about what we're going to do next. I imagine that there are some families who don't want to do more than what they're doing right now, meaning they're either happy with the 2 days a week or happy doing it remotely. But I know that there are others that are very anxious to get their kids in. So we try to follow the data to make our best decisions.
I was talking with a teenage friend of mine who was just thrilled that the sports are returning.
We're all thrilled the sports are returning. In December, I did some focus group listening to different, for all the different levels. And at that time, it was very, very clear. And the high school students made it very clear that their well-being was suffering. They needed something different, and they needed it as soon as we could do it, meaning that they needed to see each other. So the Athletic Association for Washington State allowed the beginning of some sports, and we were thrilled with that. In some ways, it kind of flies against wisdom. But in another way, I think having students involved at that level is really doing a mental health support that can't be done any other way. So we're grateful that that was allowed. And we're watching very, very closely. But we've been now in competition and in practice for about 5 weeks without any cases.
That's really good news. I'm really happy to hear it. What are you going to be doing next year?
I am going to go back to the ESD in Bremerton. And I get to work with school districts again throughout Kitsap and the Olympic Peninsula. My expertise is in systems work and change management. And so I'm very fortunate that when districts need me, I get to be there and support them. And I am so grateful. I have seen education from every viewpoint now. So I have a very broad perspective. So I look forward to using everything I've learned in my career and helping others.
So looking back over this year of the pandemic and the shepherding the school district through it, is there anything that stands out in your mind as a singular moment?
I would say that fear has been the greatest barrier for some of our folks. But I also want to say in that same moment, they've had a tremendous amount of trust. We've worked together on this, and it has been the teamwork that's brought us this far. So I appreciate everyone letting me lead. And I appreciate everyone who served on any of our subcommittees, from community members to teachers to parents to students. We've done this as a team, and I think that that's what's brought us this far and made us this successful. Quite frankly, I think we're one of the best kept secrets in the entire state, but I don't want to say that because I don't want anybody to notice.
Yes. I understand that throughout the country, many, many teachers have not yet been vaccinated. What's happening in Jefferson County? Are your teachers starting to get vaccinated?
Last week, when President Biden said the teachers should be included, suddenly there was this huge turnaround. And my hat is off to Jefferson Healthcare and our pharmacies in the area for making it happen. So our staff started getting vaccinated last Friday. And we're hoping by the end of this week, everyone's going to have their first shot. We are just so grateful to the community and for everyone for allowing that.
That's really good news, because I really thought that teachers should be vaccinated quickly. You've been listening to Our Town on KPTZ Port Townsend 91.9 FM. I'm your host, Marianne McNellis. My guest today, Superintendent Sandy Gessner Crabtree of the Port Townsend School District. In addition to thanking Sandy for being a guest on the show, I also want to thank my partner, John McPherson, editor and producer of Our Town. Hopefully we will get back in to our studio, or maybe even our new studio at Fort Worden, just like we hope all the kids get to go back to school. I want to thank you, the listener. KPTZ Port Townsend is a community radio station. Everyone who works here is a volunteer. We give her time because we all believe Jefferson County needs a free local voice. We need you, dear listener. We need more volunteers. We also need more donations to stay afloat. Like all businesses, we have expenses that go on. We all want to get back to normal, and I think it's going to happen pretty soon. So listener, stay safe, stay healthy. I'm signing off for today. But please keep listening to KPTZ Port Townsend 91.9 FM for more dynamic, eclectic community radio.
Our Town is an original KPTZ production created by Marianne McNellis and engineered by John McPherson.